So I will note that at last night's town hall meeting, a quorum of county council was present. In fact, all members of council were present with the exception of Deputy Warden Hankifsky, who had her own meeting in Port Hope to chair. County staff did seek guidance from our integrity commissioner with understanding that there would be a quorum of county council in the room. I will note that Coburg staff did have seating available for all members of county council at the front, but in order to avoid the optics of a quorum or the optics of potentially advancing business of the county, we separated into the audience and listened. I can say that I'm certain that we all heard the concerns of the community and the concerns of those who are clients of 310 Division Street, and we'll consider those pieces of information well. Staff also attended to capture notes for the meeting because there was a quorum of county council, and those notes will be appended to today's minutes as a portion of this meeting. Any questions for members of council? Thank you. So that brings us to report 2025-139, Community and Social Services Options for Sheltering Models for 310 Division Street. Before we proceed with the staff overview or questions for items 12B, I will note that we received delegation requests from members of the public regarding this item. As per the procedure bylaw, delegations are permitted at standing committees only, but council will consider a resolution to approve hearing the delegations today, given that this item did not appear at committee and only came directly to county council. Motion reads, whereas the county's procedural bylaw allows delegations at standing committees only, and whereas council may choose to waive a rule of procedure established by this bylaw, and that requires a two-thirds majority vote, now therefore be it resolved that council approve hearing delegations from members of the public regarding report 2025-139, Community and Social Services Options for Sheltering Models for 310 Division Street at the June 18th, 2025 County Council meeting. Is there a mover? It's moved by Councillor Crate, seconded by Deputy Warden Hankifsky. Is there any discussion? All in favor? Are there any opposed? That motion is carried. Madam Clerk, I will note that it's 9:39 and Councillor Cleveland has joined us here in Council Chambers. And Councillor Cleveland, I should ask if you have any declarations of interest with regard to today's agenda, noting that we have added two items, which is a verbal update on the Port Hope Walk-In Clinic and a verbal update on the town hall from last.
Noted, and no pecuniary interest.
Thank you. Welcome. So moving into the delegation portion of today's meeting, I will note that delegations will take place after the staff overview. Council questions regarding report 2025-139, Community and Social Services Options for Sheltering Models for 310 Division Street. So after the meeting, we do have two registered delegations. The first is Jeff Wheeldon as a member of the public. It's noted as a member of the public because Jeff is a member of Brighton Council, but he's coming as a member of the public. He's not representing Brighton Council. And Amanda DeFalco, Senior Director, Canadian Alliance to End Homelessness. If there's anyone else who wishes to delegate today, we will ask you to raise your hand to do so, and we will be happy to add you to the list. I will note that if you delegated last night at the town hall, I'll remind you that six of the seven members of County Council were there. So we did hear that delegation. That doesn't stop you from delegating today, but in the interest of time, if you would consider that, I would appreciate that. Is there anyone who wishes to delegate? And if you're attending online, please raise your virtual hand so we can add your name to the list. So we move into report 2025-139, Community and Social Services Options for Sheltering Models for 310 Division Street, Associate Director Carmen.
Thank you. Through you, Warden, I'll be very brief in my remarks as the options were well outlined in the report. This report comes to you as a request from County Council for us to consider options moving forward with 310, including a sober living facility. The report does outline those options that staff have worked hard to navigate to. I will take this opportunity to thank our team for also supporting this work, as it was all hands on deck with multiple priorities at the same time. So thank you to our team for being able to help put this together for council to be able to make a decision today. We are here and ready to answer any questions that may arise.
Thank you, Associate Director. And I will note that I think what we probably like to do before we hear a motion around this item is not just go through questions on the report. We want to hear the delegations, and we have a closed session matter. We'll want to hear what's said by staff in that closed session before we return and put a motion on the floor in open session. And I will note that we will be, so that we don't displace the folks in the room, we will be meeting enclosed in committee room A next door, and then we'll return to put a motion on the floor. Questions or comments, specifically questions with regard to the report 2025-139. Councillor Cleveland.
Hey, thank you very much, Chair. Again, sorry for the tardiness today. Quick question to staff. When we get into the report, we start seeing a sort of risk matrix towards the end. I'm going to look at page 30 of 32. We talk about the risk matrix. So we're seeing here risk to provincial capital funding, low, low, high, high. I'm just wondering where we got the information. Like, did we reach out to our local MPP? Did we ask whether going low access shelter, a high barrier, or sober living would in fact risk provincial funding? Or where are we assuming or are getting the information that this is at a high risk to potential provincial funding?
Associate Director.
Through you, Warden, we will be able to provide more detail in close, but the information does come from the Ministry of Municipal Affairs and Housing.
Follow up?
Yeah, so did we talk to our local MPP, a cabinet minister, Minister of Labor? Did we actually pick up the phone and call him to ask him if this is accurate, like that his government would in fact reduce funding because Coburg and this council decided to go high barrier? I just want to know that we've actually called our local MPP, the representative of the province, and we've confirmed with him that these decisions would actually risk provincial funding.
CAO?
Through you, Warden, this risk is specific to the capital funding for the project, and that's why staff dealt with ministry staff. They administer that funding, and they administer the contract that's been signed. And that's why that's who we've reached out to. The operating funding is another matter. And there is more discretion with the ongoing operating funding. No, we have not spoken specifically with the politicians. We typically leave the political discussions to the politicians. This was a staff-to-staff, county staff-to-ministry staff conversation.
Follow-up?
I guess that my last question, do we let the local MPP know that this is a concern to confirm or deny? Because again, staff to staff is wonderful, but at the end of the day, we should be dealing with elected people because they're the ones who are in the position to oversee that staff. And so we already know of many examples where individual MPs, MPPs will often step up for their communities to ensure that bureaucratic rules are adapted to ensure that their government is doing the best job they can. We do that all the time. So again, I'm just trying to understand why we wouldn't just pick up the phone to confirm with our local MPP.
CAO?
Through you, Warden, I think that is a second step, that if there is a direction, we can certainly follow up to see if a politician would like to direct the provincial staff to do something other than what is in the contractual agreement. And that would be some sort of negotiation or working with them once we had a specific plan to go forward. But at this point, it would be speculation. And without taking that detail forward, I think it would be premature to publicly state whether or not a politician was willing to go against what we already have signed as a contractual agreement.
I think it would be appropriate, regardless of how our decision goes today, that we reach out and let the MPP know what our intentions are moving forward. And I will be happy to do that with any other member of council who wishes to join me in that conversation. Councillor Cleveland.
I do have more questions, but I'm happy to open the floor if there's anyone else that has questions on the report.
Thank you. Anyone else with questions on the report? Councillor Cleveland.
By all means. Okay, so when we look at page 8, I'm wondering where we have this summary that says, this highlights a key reality. The statement is, that closing or relocating services at 310 Division will not eliminate the presence or impacts of homelessness in Coburg, as the majority of clients identify the community as their home. I'm curious, where does this reality come from? I see a lot of footnotes. I see a lot of great studies being examined. I see a lot of facts when we look at other things. But when we look at this very specific claim and this deduction, this logical deduction, I'm trying to understand where we're pulling this proof from. When I was at the CCSA in Alberta, we learned of cities in Alberta where this actually isn't the case, where actually we've seen a complete turnaround in communities that have closed shelters. And have actually seen a massive decrease in homelessness within their community, as individuals would then travel to other communities to access those services. So I'm just trying to understand where staff got the key reality from when there's no footnote study or sort of explanation on that.
Associate Director.
Thank you, through you, Warden. The sentence prior to that one indicates where most hub clients reported their home community. And as you can see, 54% of those identified Coburg, which is in fact a majority.
Follow up.
Thank you. So that actually highlights a really interesting concern, I would say, about the self-identifying factors. I'm going to use an example from 11:45 last night on my front porch in Coburg, where an individual had been dropped off. Just at the end of the street by the library. He walked up to my house at 11:45 and asked where the shelter was. It's 11:45 at night, waking me, my entire family up, and wanted to know where the shelter was. I had asked him where he came from, and he said, I'm not supposed to say that. And then I said, well, where are you originally from? And he said to me, point blank, I was told to tell you I'm from Coburg. So how do we know when people are self-identifying, especially vulnerable individuals, people who are coming to us asking for services, people who are at a low point and need help, that when their first question is, where are you from, that they're not in a state of fear or concern that they may not access those services if they don't say they're from Coburg? So I guess my question is how do we know, other than a self-identification, that we're not tilting the statistics in one way or another? And if we're using sort of a self-declared I'm from Coburg statement, does that really logically conclude that relocating services will not eliminate the presence or impacts of homelessness in Coburg? I'm just trying to draw how a statement from an individual facing homelessness who says they're from the place where the services are draws the conclusion that closing or relocating services at 310 isn't going to eliminate the presence or impacts of homelessness. I'm not seeing the correlation.
Associate Director.
Through you, Warden, I'm not sure that there's necessarily a question there. What I can say is we are relying on self-related data. In previous conversations, we've had the other conversation talked about around how many people are coming from outside of Northumberland. Throughout our data reports, we do note it as a limitation of the data that it is self-reported, but it is the data that we have. And so 54% of hub visitors identify that they are from Coburg. They consider Coburg their home, and that's where they would call home.
Regardless of that they may have been told to say that by someone who's dropped them here. That's just the information we have. We don't ask people for their papers.
Correct. And I think in the other way too, is that someone maybe has lived in Coburg for 10 or 15 years, but you ask them where their home is and maybe they refer back to the place that they were born, the place where their grandmother is, that their parents are, that their home community may not be where they have lived for the last several years, despite being a Coburg resident for that time period as well. So this is a point we have brought up in the past to council around, you know, we're working with the data that we have and how we can navigate that. But that's where we are at.
Thank you. Follow up.
Yeah, Warden, I think that's fair. And I appreciate the honesty. The fact is we use the data we have, and I appreciate that. And thank you to Director Carmen's statement. We have explored how this data has its limitations. And that's my concern, is how we're using limited data to draw massive conclusions. A further one, page 12. If space or supports were opened up outside of Coburg in lower tiers, experience has so far shown that people staying in other lower tiers often gravitate back towards Coburg based on available services and structures. So again, we're using the statement, experience has so far shown, but we've never had services outside of Coburg. So how do we know that that's true?
Associate Director.
The specific statement that's being referenced here, if you'll note where it is, this is information that came from the Homelessness Leadership Table. So this is a document of feedback we received from homelessness sector experts and other service deliverers. So this is a reflection of those commentaries. So those folks sitting around that table where they provide services and outside and where they have tried to provide those services, the conversation on that point when we consulted with them was that people often do come back to Coburg, but it was the service and expert local service agency's perspective based on their experience in serving homeless individuals here within Northumberland County.
Thank you for that follow-up.
So, Warden, again, same sort of concern I have with this. We're relying on, again, there's no footnotes. I understand that at the beginning it talks about homelessness leadership table, but here we are again. We don't actually have the facts of what is drawing this conclusion. We're being told that a group of experts have deduced this. But again, how would they have deduced this if we've never had a hub anywhere outside of Coburg to prove that? So we have experts saying things on a leadership roundtable that has no verifiable facts or data to back it up. And I'm just concerned that in this report, once again, we're seeing sort of a use of experts and self-reporting data to draw some pretty significant conclusions and deductions. I just don't understand this. So I guess my next question, and to sort of wrap it up, is in this report at the very beginning of the summary, 310 Division, I'm just trying to find the exact statement because I want to make sure I get it right. I don't want to misquote here, so I apologize for this. Oh, it talked about the purpose of 310 and how 310 Division Street was the reason that encampments in Coburg ended. And I'm just trying to understand how we can report that the reason encampments ended in Coburg was because of 310, when in reality the reason encampments ended in Coburg was because of Coburg's anti-encampment bylaw and the selling of Brookside property. I'm just wondering where that deduction came from.
Associate Director.
Through you, Warden, I think in the report it talks about 310 Division as being a key prong of our encampment approach. Our encampment response approach was broad. The fact that there was an encampment at Brookside that the county supported alongside volunteers and partners to have folks be relocated to housing solutions, to shelter spaces, that was a key piece of why the provincial government also funded that 310 model and those shelter spaces. So encampments move and relocate and shut down for a multitude of various reasons on a regular basis. So I think the wording in the report is that 310 was a key prong, and we saw that. We saw that when people had a place to go where couples could sleep together in the same room safely, when pets were allowed, when there was a place for someone to come in and get out of the cold or the rain or the heat, that it is a welcoming space, and that is where we were able to provide that respite from the elements. And that was a key factor in the dismantling of the Brookside encampment.
Follow up. Thank you. So again, I found the sentence. So this is the statement. The opening of 310 Hub and Shelter led to a visible reduction in encampments and unsheltered homelessness in Coburg. But as we heard last night at the town hall, it hasn't. So I'm not sure, again, first of all, it wasn't necessarily 310, and I accept Director Carmen's analysis that definitely it's part of it, but that's not what it says here. It says that the 310 hub led to a visible reduction. Well, can everyone, perhaps someone can remind me on the timelines, when did 310 open and when did Brookside close?
Does anyone know when it opened? Well, if someone will hear and will know, remember when it opened, do we know when Brookside closed?
Thank you. So 310.
Mr. Smith.
I don't have specific dates on when Brookside closed, but 310 absolutely led to less visible homelessness. We house folks upwards of 50 people on a regular basis that would otherwise have to find other accommodations. Part of the planning in that was we had people kind of in a hold mode in motel rooms, both in Coburg and in Brighton. And we were waiting for those renovations to be ready. Also, we deliberately opened the first floor first to have that space, that warming space for people to go. Those folks were experiencing homelessness. They were visibly homeless outdoors. So it absolutely has made an impact on the visible number of homelessness.
Follow up.
Yeah, and thank you, Mr. Smith. I agree. Initially, when 310 was open, we did see a visible decrease in homelessness, so you are 100% accurate. However, we're 7 months down the road, and due to the operation of the shelter, due to the opening of beds and the knowledge that's now spreading around southeastern Ontario, we're seeing a pull of residents into Coburg now. And so what I was referring to is the increase in visible homelessness is at this point in time now. And I'm not suggesting that 310 didn't initially show that, yes, all of the people who are in the encampment definitely, and there's a lot of great work done there. My statement was simply to clarify that as of yesterday or as of this morning, there is more visible homelessness around the community. We have our bylaw officers out in Coburg evicting encampments as we speak. There is consistent charges moving forward. And so my statement wasn't to contradict or to chastise the work of 310 when it opened. I think there was great work done. I'm simply stating that clearly, 310 Hub, while it originally led to a decrease in visible homelessness, has since not. Thank you.
Thank you. CAO.
Through you, Warden, just to provide some more context, I think we do have to acknowledge that the initial format of that operation and the initial vision of 310 was significantly altered as operations had to be modified in order to ensure that we remained compliant with the bylaws under which we were working. That led to adjustments, which certainly did influence the decisions of the homeless in the community to access the full range of services available there.
Thank you for that. Regardless, we are seeing an increased level of visible homelessness across Coburg, and I think it behooves us to do what we can to help in that aspect for the Coburg residents, certainly the folks we heard from last night. Follow up.
Last and final question, and I do appreciate the ability to ask these councils, so I thank you. When we're looking at option three, and I'm going to go to page, where are we at? 2122, yes. When we're looking at operational outcomes around a high barrier, low access, there's some suggestions that high barrier, low access does not necessarily allow for dogs or pets or any of that. I'm wondering, is that like a mandated thing? Could we not have a high barrier, low access that does allow pets, that does allow couples, that does allow, right? Like, if we simply had a high barrier for drug use, why do we have to raise the barrier for everything else, is my question.
I think those policies can be set by county council at the end of the day.
Agreed. I'm just wondering why then, sir, in the report that it's made to seem like that has to be part of that conversation. It's held as a consideration, and I'm just concerned that maybe that's sort of angling this council that we have to. And I just wanted to make sure that you and this council, sir, know that we don't have to have a high barrier that has the highest of barriers. We can simply pick and choose which barriers we choose. So thank you for that opportunity.
Yeah, I'll look to staff to answer the question, but I suspect what staff have done is gone and tested the quote market. I'm not sure that's the right word, to see what's out there. And this is the experiences they've shown from other communities. At the end of the day, should we choose to have a different policies in our shelter, we can do exactly that. Staff?
Through you, Warden, that's correct. When we look at a high barrier shelter, all of those things that the council referenced are considered elements of a high barrier shelter. So a high barrier shelter is really about lowering the number of people who are able to access and or qualify for those services. So it's really about that very narrow population. However, you're exactly right, Warden, that should council wish to direct certain rules or criteria, then that's within that power as well.
Thank you.
Follow up. Final comment, actually. I just wanted to offer my sincere thanks. My sincere thanks to the members of council who came out and put their time in to listen to the residents of Cobourg. Thank you for your courage in showing up and listening. To county staff who made their time available to come and listen, that is greatly appreciated. It meant a great deal to both myself, Cobourg Council, and the entire community of Cobourg that all of you took the time to be there last night. And I just want to make sure I said thank you for that.
Thank you, Councillor Cleveland. On behalf of County Council, I can say that the conversations were respectful. The information was provided was insightful. I appreciated that I'm not sure what the actual number at the end of the day was, but I'm guessing it's around 39. I think you had 41. You added a one. Three didn't show up. So thank you to everyone who presented last night. Thank you to Cobourg Town Council who provided the opportunity to hear what people had to say. It was very informative, and I don't think anyone was surprised, with maybe one or two exceptions. There were some startling pieces of video. Deputy Warden.
I was just going to make a comment based on a couple of comments ago, so just bring us back to that. But first of all, I just wanted to confirm, Councillor Cleveland, did you have an opportunity to read my letter to the public about why I was not able to be in attendance?
Yes, Councillor Hankiewski, it was noted, and I was let everyone in council and the staff know exactly of that reason. And so, yes, it was also noted that the majority of County Council was in attendance. There was a few questions I was asked personally, and I made sure everyone knew that you had formally let us know that you weren't going to be able to make it due to your attendance at your council meeting.
And I do want to just inform my colleagues that I did get up super early today and did watch. So I did have an opportunity to hear the delegations. I did want to come back to an earlier point in the discussion around what we determine is can be in or out of any particular kind of shelter service. And I think it's really important to keep in mind that when we talk about drawing on best and promising practices from other jurisdictions, that it's always really important that those are context specific and appropriate to the local communities in which we live. And so nothing is just something that you lift up from one place to another, that we should be looking at tailored context specific solutions.
Thank you for that. Any other questions with regard to the report before I move on to delegations?